Back on Downtown. Time for this week's Message in the Bottle, brought to you by Bangor Wine and Cheese Company at 86 Hammond Street in downtown Bangor. We welcome in Eric Meehan. Hello, sir.
What is with the troll job?
What?
Jeez. That was clever, though.
Thank you. Thank you. I thought you'd appreciate that.
Oh, my glory. Well, hi, everybody. I hope everybody's enjoying this stunning weather. I don't know what we've done to deserve it, but I'll take it. I know something else. I know that given my current second ranking in my fantasy league, that I should have Joe Shane's job, and he could. I don't even want him managing my fantasy team.
No.
But
no one would.
I feel confident that I could do better at this point. So
every time you see Saquon Barkley get another touchdown, you shake your head.
I'm just saying, Mara's give me a. I'm here. My phone is always on.
There you go.
Give me a ring.
There may be some openings soon. Yeah.
And I'll work for less. I don't even care. Like, way less. Which will be a significant upgrade for me, I'm sure. So, it really is. Boy, not to get too far afield here, but man, sometimes you see the salaries of people that are just hopelessly incompetent, and you're like, wow. I'm sure not totally incompetent, but like...
Yeah. Well, in the Giants' case, I think...
In a profession, they seem it.
Right.
It's like asking me to recommend a red wine, and I just come at you with, like, white. Like, no. Boy, we had such a basic thing there. Well, anyway, I am sorry that I had to jump off last week. We were talking, of course, about the effects of the massive flooding from Lake Missoula, and we had talked earlier about how that shaped a lot of the places in Oregon, and then last week we were talking a little bit about how it shaped a place both in Oregon and Washington, which is the Columbia River Valley. And I didn't really get to mention, so I'm just going to mention it quick before I move on to today's topic, that there are some really, really noteworthy AVAs, again, American Viticultural Areas, in that area, which are getting more recognition these days. They basically kind of sit right above the Columbia River. It takes a large bend in and around a city called, well, Walla Walla. Everybody knows Walla Walla, although you may not know where it is, but it's inland quite a ways, just kind of reminding people that once you kind of get past the mountain range that is, east of Seattle, the topography and the climate of Washington change to much is actually desert-like. And as I said, it's formed geologically by these immense floods. So worth going out and seeing. And of course, while you're there, you can visit some really excellent wineries. So next week will be our annual Halloween segment. So today we're just going to kind of finish up the North American continent, just mentioning some other things that just, you know, have no other place. So this is sort of the orphan segment. But I call it New Successes and Old Settlements and the East Coast Resurgence. By the way, forgive me if I falter with my words. I got the old tufa yesterday in my left arm, the COVID and flu, and boy, I mean, I'm glad I got them, but I'm a little foggy today, I must say. So if anybody's getting them, just plan appropriately. We are the U.S., we are the sixth most planted wine country in the world, which I think sometimes surprises people. I think people think that we probably produce a lot more, on the whole than we do. In fact, even Turkey produces more wine than we do, even though, of course, it's generally not considered great or accessible because of, you know, geopolitics. But of course, you know, we think this because, as I've mentioned before, you know, even when the Vikings got here, they called the New World Vinland because we had a lot of grapes. Also, the famous explorer Giovanni Verrazzano, who didn't build the bridge, but for whom the bridge is named, noted grapes of New York State in his writings. But what we had here, just to remind everybody, are things like Vitis lambrusca, Vitis riparia, Vitis rotundifolia, Vitis vulpine. But the industry, the wine industry that we all know and love, is Vitis vinifera. Those are the grapes we like to drink. And of course, it is on the rootstock of some of those other grapes that we basically save the vineyards of Europe and as well as now, you know, the East Coast of North America. And so speaking of the East Coast, the first wine actually in the U.S. was made in Florida in the 1560s, and I'll bet you can guess who made it. It was Europeans. Boy, wherever they go, they like their drink, and God bless them for it. But it was more importantly, I suppose, in the founding charters of both Virginia and the Carolinas to make wine, and that was in 1619. And of course, we know how well that went, but it was their original intention to turn it into a thriving agricultural component of the New World, along with everything else. I'm sure that they would have used free people to work the vineyards and all that sort of stuff, just like they did with all the other agricultural aspects of the East Coast. But hey, we'll let that go. Didn't happen, so didn't matter. The wine gradually spread into the rest of the South, and they started to use some of the grapes that they found there that weren't actually Vitis vinifera, the most famous being probably the Muscadine grape. If anybody's ever been down like Georgia and the Carolinas, you may have had Muscadine wine, which is okay, kind of tangy, actually. But it spread also into the Ohio Valley, and that is where the first commercially successful wine was made. It was a wine called Piscataqua. You can still find it in places, but it was the first commercially successful wine made by a guy named Nicholas Longworth, and that was in the mid-1830s. So the wine industry, you know, kind of started, and they were trying to figure it out. And, of course, on the West Coast, they were having much more success, A, because no phylloxera allows, but B, they had, similar to the European story, you know, in places like Burgundy, etc., you had missions, you had monks whose basically sole plot in life, besides conversion of the natives, was, you know, drinking. It's not true, but it's a little true. I mean, it's not a coincidence that kind of where, again, where monks were, there were also vineyards. It's how it is. So what stunted all that, of course, you know, as we've talked about in the past, Prohibition, World Wars, things like that. It just kind of, you know, every 15 or so years, something happened, whether it was law, whether it was lack of young men and even young women to go into the vineyards and work them. It was tough. And then also blue laws in every state. And bear in mind, this is very important. Much as we're discussing other federal/state rights these days of significantly more import. Every state has different alcohol laws, and that is deliberate. And Maine, just to remind everybody, was the first to enact prohibition and the last to repeal it. So just food for thought. Today, on October 22nd of 2024, there is wine being made in every state, although admittedly, some are from out-of-state grapes that they have shipped in because the state in question, or you know, is not particularly good at growing Vitis vinifera. But as such, 75% of the varietal needs to be in it from that state to label it from that state. Otherwise, you have to label it sort of, you know, American wine or whatever it is. The other thing that you see a lot and that I just kind of want to hit before we run out of time is the fact that the wines that you're going to see up in the Northeast, and I'm going to include like New York State and also parts of Canada, are going to be these hybrid grapes, and they are getting better and better as people, you know, work with them more and more and more. So as you're out there, maybe, you know, visiting Quebec or, of course, the Finger Lakes regions, there are some Vitis vinifera there, but there are also hybrids are absolutely worth trying. For instance, grapes like the Catawba, Concord, Delaware. And then also there's other things that, you know, states who can't really do Vitis vinifera very well do try to do instead. So you've got dandelion wine here in Maine, for instance. You've got blueberry wine, right? You've got rhubarb wines. Of course, you have mead, which is honey wine. And I did want to just quickly mention some of these are chapitalized, which means they add sugar to boost the alcohol content. It's neither good nor bad necessarily, bearing in mind that in a lot of famous wine countries, chapitalization is illegal just because of, you know, tradition, history, etc. But just something to be aware of. Anyway, I guess that's sort of my my sum up spiel on the rest of North America. As I said, next week we will do our Halloween edition talking about wine and religious rituals, etc., and other weird, spooky things that they do. Then we'll move on to South America thereafter. I hope everybody's well. And despite my complaints, go get your jabs. And I'll see you in the shop.
That sounds like a plan. Thanks, Eric. Have a good week.
All righty. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Eric Meehan, Bangor Wine and Cheese Company, Message in the Bottle, every Tuesday here on Downtown.